So, molecular solids are held together by relatively weak forces. Now, for some of those, that was really, really distinctive because you can smell them. If you can smell them, the forces holding them together are weak enough so that molecules can break off and go up your nose. Other things that we hopefully found out is that, what's your sulfur look like? Is that sulfur does a bunch of really interesting things. And it does a bunch of stuff. No, I don't like the white stuff. I don't like the yellow stuff. But that, you tried it? What was gooey? For those of you who remember the nice little black globs of revolting things that might have come out of somebody's nose, especially if you're making a noise like that, it's plastic sulfur. So when you heat sulfur up, it melts for the first time. And it's quite runny. And it's runny and yellow. Then you heat it some more, it goes dark, dark. Some people refer to it as dark red, but it looked almost sort of browny black colour. And it went completely viscous. So it was runny, then you got to a point where you could turn the test tube upside down and nothing would happen. Like it would just sit there. Then you heat it some more, and it goes runny again. You pour that into water, and you got something that was sort of bendy and stretchy and did look sort of revoltingly like something some small boy would have found. If you leave it, now we've got this piece that has been there since last week, and now it's hard. So what was plastic? I mean, the other point about polar and non-polar, if this is sulfur, if this is like elemental sulfur, it hasn't reacted, it just melted. So what kind of things are in it? Just sulfur. So what kind of particles is it? Atoms, ions, or molecules? Molecules. So if it was gooey and stretchy and stuff, and you looked at it and, that's interesting, what would happen if I put that in my mouth and chewed it? What would happen? It'd chew. You'd chew it, and then eventually go crunchy. What would it taste like? You reckon? Atoms, ions, or molecules, it would taste of nothing. I mean, not quite nothing, because I mean, if you put a spoon in your mouth, there's sort of slight taste, but that's probably actually electrical rather than anything else. And if you've got lots of fillings and you chew on tinfoil, you can get interesting electric shocks. Or pick up the radio. Because there is some kind of electrical stuff with metals, but mostly it wouldn't taste at all. What's chewing gum? Rubber. Mostly it's rubbery stuff. That's why they suggest that you shouldn't swallow it. And yeah, it's atoms, ions, and molecules thing. Sulfur's got a bunch of really interesting properties. It's made of molecules. Now, if it melts at 100-odd degrees, one of the things I was doing last time was having some discussion about linking two things to a melting point. Anyone remember what the two things we linked together with melting point were? Okay. I know, it's first thing in the morning. So, things we linked together with melting point. Sorry, Gordon? It is intermolecular forces, and melting point's a good indicator of intermolecular forces. Why? Kinetic energy. Okay, we're back to kinetic energy. So, we're looking at molecular solids again. Okay. Low melting points. Because okay, low melting points because of weak intermolecular forces. Now, we looked at a couple of examples of those as I went through water, ammonia and methane for polar and non-polar. Sulfur is another interesting one. Sorry, we'll just note the other staggering piece of science that goes with it, which is, okay, heat equals kinetic energy, which equals a half mv squared. I should technically write that heat's proportional to kinetic energy because it doesn't equal it. But as long as we can forgive that piece of mathematics, what we're thinking is big picture with this. So, in the big picture department, when we look at the periodic table, what's the big idea that goes with the periodic table? Sorry? Atomic numbers are the thing they organise it across. What about the down things? Okay, the properties in a vertical group are similar because same number of valence electrons. Okay? So, would we expect this to be true as you go down a group for something like the melting point? And the answer is probably yes. Like, let's try oxygen. Okay, how many electrons has oxygen got? How many valence electrons has oxygen got? Six. So it needs two to get a full outer shell. How does it do this? Shares two with another oxygen. So they share. So if we do the dotty thing, okay, we try and get rid of unpaired dots. Four electrons shared between them, or we draw it a little bit more formally with one line being two bonds, or German fashion, okay, one line equaling two electrons, makes sense, but do not write this in an NCEA answer, right? Nitpicky. So, nitpicky, we draw the electrons. Okay. Now, hard questions. James, are the atoms the same or different? Same. So what kind of bonding is there? Covalent. Okay. Is it polar or non-polar? Why? Yeah, you, because Gordon gave you that answer. Because there's no arguing over the charge. Okay? Which atom wins in this fight for electrons? Neither. Okay? So they have to share evenly. So, very quickly, oxygen. Melting point. So, sulfur is going to be like oxygen. Let's do melting point -219. Boiling point -183. Okay. How's sulfur compared to that, Alicia? Exactly. Why did you volunteer to answer that question? You did. You played the volunteering for the teacher game. What do you reckon? I mean, you've seen sulfur, right? What's it look like? Yellow, solid, liquid, gas. Solid. Like, you can make it into a piece and whack yourself with it. It's a solid. Okay. It's in the family there. Melting point. Anyone want to guess what the melting point of sulfur was? Those of you who were here and watched it? Yeah, those of you who were here and watched it. So it's 100, yeah, just over 100. You put it in the burner, you waved it around a bit. So sulfur's actually got two melting points, and that's something we won't talk about. Boiling point. I'm going to disagree with the data book because that number's easier to remember. The data book says 445. No, it's not. Thank you for asking. Thank you for paying attention. Okay. What conclusion can you draw? Okay. All the information that we need to draw a conclusion is actually sitting on the board. So, sulfur molecule's got a thing way higher because the mass is way bigger. Now, I was about to say there's only one way the mass can get way bigger. We'll see if anyone can do it. Anyone got any idea how you can get the mass so much bigger for sulfur?
More protons.
Nope. More protons get you up to 32. Rowena? It's a bigger game. Yeah, it's cheating. Okay, oxygen is O2. Sulfur is S8. Mass. It's still molecules. In other words, there is another way you can get that thing to share electrons, which is to make a ring thing. Sulfur is a solid because the best way for the atoms to pack together, and that's something that we can't work out from simple equation, is a ring of eights. So you melted it the first time, and it melted and went runny and was yellow, like, you know, yellow sulfur, yellow solid sulfur, yellow liquid sulfur. Now, when you heated it up some more, something happened. Turned black and really thick and viscous, if we use a technical term. Guess what happened then? This is a hard guess, we won't. Char. The rings broke. That's exactly what happened. The rings broke and it turned into a long chain. Then we heated that and we melted it like melting golden syrup. How many people have melted golden syrup? Okay, it's really thick and gloopy and then you heat it up and it gets really, really runny. Or if you're putting golden syrup into pikelets and stuff, you have to heat the spoon first because then it falls off. Otherwise, you like put in one spoonful and it takes 20 minutes. So, yeah, okay. Showing off. It's always got to cook pikelets. When I was little. But the basic thing's still true, right? The melting point is still low-ish. It's low compared to metals. But all the properties that we see are things that we can actually work out from stuff that... a little bit of things like knowing about kinetic energy. Okay. We've still got molecular solids. Molecular solids are soft and usually respond really interestingly to being hit with a sledgehammer. And sulfur shatters really satisfyingly. Some people slept banging metals with a sledgehammer, got them to break up, but generally, and then we got to flatten the magnesium ribbon some more. So we're looking for general things. Molecular solids have got low melting points when they're weak, and basically their melting point depends on the size of the molecule. Now, I don't think we're going to talk about why, where that force comes from very much. We're going to just very briefly gloss over it in a minute. And someone's going to go, no, tell me real. Okay, so. So melting points are lowest, and they basically depend on the mass . Okay, best example of the mass of the molecule thing. Because there is a classic example, and it's not oxygen and sulfur. The classic example, with the other thing we bashed with the hammer, wax. Wax is a molecular solid, made up of carbon and hydrogen. And I've put out the formula before, so... Now we're going to go into this. This is one of the topics that we're going to come up to shortly. But carbon compounds form families, and basically they can form chains with each other because of the four outer electrons really, really easily. So they do that, and there's a whole lot of like predictable properties. So the smallest of them is methane. Melting point, negative 182. Then we'll pick something that people have seen before, like butane. Why do I think you've seen it before? It's in lighters, okay? Under pressure in lighters, its boiling point is half a degree. So under pressure, comes out as a gas. Okay. Okay, so decane. Decane and okay. Okay, and today's star pick therefore is someone is going to guess. Someone's going to guess me hexadecane. Emily! Okay, now I just want you to guess. Pick a number for its melting point. Okay, 6 this way, 5 that way. Okay, so there's the gap, right? Somewhere between. Okay. We have a bit of zero on the floor. Do we have any takers for more than zero? It's 6 carbons bigger than decane and 5 carbons smaller than icosane. Icosane minus 30. I'm going to say by yelling loudly, I'm going to take it. I'm going to be polite and to the person I asked first. Then you can see if you're right or not. So we have a 0 and a 4, Emily. You got your own idea, or are you going to be judged by these guys? You're going to pick one of them, 0 or 4? 0. Okay. It's all right. 0 is a really good guess. 4 is a really good guess. Okay? And being 10 or 20 either way is like nothing. The plan is, there's a continuum. You can draw a graph and they actually sit on a graph. As it gets bigger, I'll check that I've actually got that run right, otherwise I'll have to apologise. No, I don't have to apologise. You can draw them on a graph and they plot in a line. As it gets bigger, the melting point goes up. If something suddenly got way off that line, there's a conclusion you could draw. What would it be? Really simple version of a conclusion. Something weird just happened. Okay. That's as hard as I want it to be. Something weird happened. We get that when we start looking at stuff like, and I use the one about water. Methane melts at negative 182. Water weighs the same, melts at zero. This is the Tuesday morning thing. You're all catatonic, aren't you? Or terrified. Water melts at zero. You know that methane's part of a plan. So, water melting at zero says something weird went on. And you actually know how to take that further and work it out. How do we take it further and work it out? Are the atoms the same or different? Different. Okay. Are they carbon and hydrogen? No. Are they symmetrically arranged? No. Therefore, it's polar. And that's actually the answer. Water's actually the polarest thing, pretty much, apart from hydrogen fluoride. So, with simple molecular things, an observable trend of melting point. So, observable trend of melting points, and we put the other, codify the other thing. If there's a departure from it, a departure from the pattern, something weird happened. Okay, that's so for simple molecular things, the melting point tells you something really, really important. Okay, I'm going to be irritating one more time. Well, no, that's not true. I'm going to be irritating a lot more, but for right now, I'm going to be irritating one more time. Phosphorus is sitting right beside sulfur. So, it's got 15 protons, it's got 5 valence electrons, it's sitting in a pattern. In fact, I can't read the periodic table either. Okay. If we had to guess a number for phosphorus, what would we guess? Is it going to be like sulfur, or is it going to be like oxygen?
Sulfur.
Yeah, it's like sulfur. Okay. If I said that phosphorus has got a melting point of 32, and you know that sulfur's got a melting point of like 113, what do you reckon that is about phosphorus? So, sulfur's got eight atoms in the molecule. So if we had to think about what kind of molecule phosphorus had, what would we guess? Oxygen's got 2. Sulfur's got 8. Yeah. Somewhere in between. Okay, there's no easy... Yeah. I'm not expecting you to find easy answers to this. It's called somewhere in between. Okay. What's something weird? Okay, we're back to molecular solids. Something weird happened. What's weird? Weird here is polarity. What are the questions you ask to work out if something's polar or not? Are the atoms the same or different? And are they symmetrically arranged? And that's a special version of the question. So the special version of the question is so that the poles cancel, and I'm avoiding writing it specifically at the moment. Okay, if the molecules are polar, the melting point will be higher. I'll do the because. Because the forces are stronger. Right. That's enough for molecular solids. So we've done ionic solids, we've done molecular solids. We've got two more types to do and 7 minutes to do them. Excellent. You might hope that means I'm not going to ask any more questions. You might be wrong. We'll see. So, let's try this one. What? I beg your pardon, I've just found a question. What are the properties of metals? What are the properties of metals, Josiah? Shiny, ductile. We'll put them ductile and malleable together. Conduct. HN, we'll do these. We'll conduct electricity and conduct heat. Have I missed anything? They go ding when you hit them. We're not going to write sonority in that list. Okay. Structure of the solid and the bonds has to explain those properties. So, what are the properties that turn up? In other words, what can we conclude from those observations? And I'll avoid shiny at the moment. Shiny actually is a part of this. Let's try the easy one. They conduct electricity. What does that mean? Gordon?
Charged particles free to move.
Charged particles free to move. Okay. What are they in this case? That's the one. Right, so conduct electricity means charged particles free to move. They are electrons. Okay. Conduct heat.
Particles packed tightly together.
Conducting heat, what's heat? What kind of energy?
Kinetic energy.
So, kinetic energy of the particles. So they've got a jiggle. So you stick one end of your fork in the fire, the particles start jiggling faster. That jiggling gets to the end where your hand is. That's because they're packed really tightly together. So it's like a Newton's cradle. If you bang one, the stuff will go, the impulse will go down to the other end. So that one says tightly packed. Okay, malleable and ductile. Flatten when you hit them, bend and stretch. Okay, it's got to do with the bonds. It means that, like, if you're pulling something, if you're pulling it into a wire, what's that actually do? What has to be happening? If we do it with blue tack, what happens? Okay, so they can move over each other, but the bond's still there. Okay, I've just spent thousands of dollars on having people put stretched pieces of metal around little parts of my property. It's called wire. Huge amounts of it. And steel can get pulled into a wire, in this case 3.15 millimetres in diameter, and it's really strong. Usually it retains cars that fall into it. Horses, cows, various other things. So, the bonds can't be directional. Like, if you hit the sulphur, it shatters. You break particular bonds. If you hit a piece of metal, now, that's an interesting thing about what happened with the pieces of copper when we smacked them. But this means bonds not directional and layers can slide over each other. Shiny is actually a property of the electrons. There's delocalized electrons around and they can interact with light as it hits the surface of a close-packed shiny thing. So, in metals, What's the kind of bonding you find in metals, James? Yeah, we have to speed that one up. Okay. Metals are layers closely packed held together by non-directional metallic bonds. That way now it's broken. Okay, and we talk about those bonds as being positive centres, and the valence electrons are loosely held by a number of positive centres. People use the term ions in a sea of electrons, but it's not great if you have to work out what on earth ions are, because there's no evidence that there's ions present in a metal. It's like the one about glass being a liquid and flowing down in windows, which is why they're like thinner at the top and thicker at the bottom. It's not true, because glass is actually more viscous than the metallic lead that holds them in place. And so if they did droop, you'd expect all the lead to have dripped to the bottom of the thing about 100 years before the glass did. So metallic lead's actually got a lower viscosity than liquid glass. Glass doesn't run very far, except when it's running. Okay. So metallic bonds have delocalized electrons. And I'm going to say shared . So the valence electrons aren't bound by any particular atom. That's why they're free to move. The same thing that makes those electrons able to be pulled off reasonably easily by electricity or other atoms means that if they're all in a gang, they are just all hanging out together. And so the electrons are everywhere. Okay. Network solids. Big molecules. This means that if you're melting it, breaks covalent bonds. That is the kicker for these. If melting it breaks covalent bonds, what do you think the melting point's going to be? Big, medium, or little? It's going to be big. Okay? There are three common examples. Now, this is the last time we're going to spend on this, so if you'll indulge me for a moment, what I want you to do, chapter 9 in that, and I will check it probably by Friday. Second thing, though, the three examples, just if we can be very rapid on this. One is carbon. Carbon and silica. So, diamond, graphite you played with. Okay, melting points. If we rapidly rack them up. The carbons, diamond melts at some number bigger than this. Graphite melts at this temperature, 3730, and the other thing. Now, some network solids are smaller than this. Polythene is potentially a network solid, and it, so quartz melts at about 1700. Okay, so two homework tasks. One, make sure you do this. Second, sometime before Friday, I want you, when I ask you to sit down and do it, to be able to draw the structure of a diamond and the structure of graphite freehand on a piece of paper. If you need to, there are nice internet sites that will help you do this. Thank you.